The topic of waiting between mikvah. So we have to now try to lay out some of the details of what we know about the sugya and some of the other halachic questions that are addressed in light of this, and try to figure out if we can find some kind of a conceptual framework that will address everything. And it is complex because we have here some various minhagim coming from different directions, and I have to see if the various approaches to try to approach it conceptually, we have to see if they hold up. So what we know is that the Gemara seems to tell us, not very straight out, but at the end of the day seems to tell us that there is an obligation not only not to actually eat basa v'chalav together. Right, we know that you can't have a beef and cheese sandwich, even if they're not cooked together. But it's an issur d'rabbanan to eat the beef and cheese sandwich. But what if you're not actually eating the two items in the same bite? Still, we require more of a separation than that. We require that there be some greater distancing between the two. So, first of all, what does that mean practically? And that's where we're going to see a big divergence of opinions, and we've already gotten a little taste of that. But also, why should there be a separation? So what reasons do we know about, a little bit, about why there should be a separation?
To say that the issur is about creating the tireless?
Okay, so one possibility, right? So therefore, maybe having them too close together is itself a creation of the taruvas, right? And that we saw possibly the way in Rusal Veshik Shirim, the Rashi and the Mishnah was read, that having them on the table together could lead you eating them together, and when you're eating them together, maybe that is a creation of a taruvas. What other possibilities? What else do we find emphasized in the Rishonim about why we don't want to have, let's say, meat before milk? Yeah,
do it, may come to do it by actual basar
chalav. Wait, well, it may come to do what?
Eat them together, I guess.
So let's eat them as a sandwich. Is that the concern?
It could be also just that you have milk, like you have meat, and then you have milk afterwards, because you're used to it from like eating chicken and then eating.
Saying so, once if you're used to having them one after the other, you may come to eat them together. Okay, this is definitely an aspect. So if you focus like that, right, you say that the issue is that either of the two ways you said, really. Let's start with that, right? So if you say that the concern is that you may come to, because the truth, the two ways are basically saying the same thing. Right? So if we're afraid of the chicken, well, not chicken, we'll say, is that we're afraid of the beef and cheese sandwich. Now, if we're afraid of the beef and cheese sandwich, so a couple questions. First of all, beef and cheese sandwich is not an Isser Daraisa. So if this is a gezera for that, that's going to open up some problems. We may have an answer, maybe.
If it's like beef and cheese, like let's say the cheese is like both of them are hot, so maybe that's like considered visual in a way.
So is that the assumption here? Or is it going back to the first sugya in the Gemara that's going to all happen? Still seems like we have to add that into the mix. Right? So still seems like that would make it a step removed. So I think one question we'd have to ask then is, if that's what we're worried about, so is that a gzera consideration? So is there some reason to say, well, like we saw before with putting things on the table together, that it's all just one process? Or maybe this is eating it together. Maybe the din d'rabbanan not to eat meat and milk together. So what do we mean? Do we only mean the sandwich where you have every bite you're taking a little cheese and a little milk, a little meat? What if I have on my plate, I have meatballs and macaroni and cheese, and I were to alternate taking bites? So would that be the issur d'rabbanan of eating basar b'chalav? Okay, but let's say you are saying that, right? So where are you drawing the line? See what you're already saying, right? You're saying that if you eat the cheese and beef sandwich, or that's clearly eating basar b'chalav. Not basar b'chalav d'orais again, because they weren't cooked together. But if we have a prohibition of eating basar b'chalav, so the minimum, it's got to be that having a cheeseburger that wasn't cooked together, having a cheeseburger would for sure violate that. Right? That much we know. That's got to be, because you're having both in the same bite. That's got to be. So how far away can we go from that? So let's say you're alternating bites.
I mean, I think, like, probably, seems like it would be a problem.
Okay, so it seems like it would be a problem. And the reason you're saying is that maybe there'll be some leftover. But what you're already opening up to is saying that if we're going to prohibit eating them together, so it's reasonable to assume that it doesn't just mean eating every bite at the same time, but that when they're close enough, then that is essentially eating them together. That it doesn't just have to be an actual sandwich to be considered eating together. Especially when we're not talking about a cooked item. When we're talking about an item that was cooked together. All right, so then they're fused. And every bite, if you cooked your steak in butter, so every bite is steak cooked in butter. So then we understand that's a mixture of basar b'chalav. But we're already not talking about something that was cooked together. So is it only a sandwich? Presumably not. Presumably it's if you have the men the meal together, that's eating basar b'chalav. So it could be that what we're talking about in this sugya is essentially how far does that go? If we're saying you can't have them together, so how far apart do they have to be?
That plays into one of the answers is of why the combination is part of the answer.
No, we're trying to just figure out what is this issue of waiting? What is this issue of separation? Is it a gzeira? Is it we're worried about something else? So it could be that it's not even that we're worried about something else. It could be that this is that. And we could throw another step in between. So let's say you have steak for the meal, and right away you have dairy ice cream for dessert. Is that eating basar b'chalav? So couldn't that just be the question? That maybe this isn't a new din. Right? Maybe this is just defining the parameters of what's called eating together. And that there has to be some clear dividing line between one and the other. Now, it's going to complicate things a little bit as far as trying to have a really neat conceptual framework for it. Is that even though a lot of details are disputed, as we'll see, it's clear that we're definitely more concerned in one direction than the other. Right? What do we mean by that? That definitely the issue is much more meat before milk than the other way around. Right? Which is not to say there's no concern about the other way around, and there could be some factors that affect that, but it's clear that the basar is the bigger concern when it comes first. Now, there are some reasons for that. So that's also what I was a little bit getting before. So what does some Rishonim point out as far as what is special about basar? So there's two aspects. Right? So one aspect is what is expressed by the Rambam. Right, you saw the Rambam. What does the Rambam say? That, yeah, right, exactly, that there's meat still between your teeth. And that meat between your teeth may still be there for a while. And sometimes you have dinner and you wake up in the morning and you find meat between your teeth. And so it can last there for a while. So, so we gotta brush your teeth. We gotta floss. So, what if? So, what is that concern? So the Rambam says it's not going to disappear necessarily just with washing your mouth out, and that's going to be a concern. But apparently, after the time elapses, and we haven't yet figured out the time, but after the time elapses, then it loses its status already as meat that you have to worry about. Maury?
It just seems like the few that Rambam there's a way around it. I mean, if once you speak with the star, that because there's meat stuck in between your teeth, so now we can just say what if a person flosses and brushes his teeth in between eating.
Okay, so it might be. So first of all, some Rishonim say that right away, right? Some Rishonim say not exactly flossing and brushing your teeth, but that kinuach v'hadacha is enough. That was the view of some of the Rishonim. So that's something we also have to try to figure out. Why one might agree with that, one might not agree with that. Now Rashi has a slightly different formulation. What does Rashi say over here on the daf? This is Rashi in the middle of Kaf Hei Amud Aleph. Asu lechol gvina. Says Rashi, Mishum de baser motzi shuman. So there's a taste of the fat that comes out of the meat. Uhinidbak bepeh, umayrich betaimo. That sticks in your mouth. You have the taste of meat in your mouth for some extended period of time.
That would be the same case seemingly with certain types of hard cheese.
Oh, maybe. So you're suggesting a chumrah. You probably know you're not the first to suggest the chumrah, but that's as we'll see, that's one of the related issues.
Meaning, like, if Rashi is maintaining that it's because of the tam, that the davar is no sin, then it seems a little bit, or it's possible to suggest that maybe it's a little bit more shver to say that meat is the more chamer davar.
You think she's a starker?
Do you see that there are certain dairy products that also are missing tam? That's a very strong tam.
Well, again, there are those, as we'll see, who have suggested such a chamer. So onion is an interesting question. How exactly onions fit in? How a davar charif? So that, let's set aside.
Yeah, that with meat.
Yeah, so how exactly does this fit in is an interesting question. That's an additional point we'll come back to. Jesse?
Can we just define tam a little bit better? Like, what does that mean?
So now Rashi? You're going to culinary school.
What's Rashi's concern? Is it that it tastes like meat?
It sounds like the experience of taste is going to still be there, which we can relate to. You know what I mean? Like, to still feel like you can, the memory of the food is still stark in your mind. You're still experiencing it for a certain period of time. So here you have two different formulations, Rambam and Rashi. And do you guys get to see the tour at all? I mentioned it earlier. So the tour discusses differences between them, right? But before talking about the differences between them, so what's common to them, and like I said, which we can't really hide from, is that if we say this is all about just keeping meat and milk separate, it's clear that it's not equal, that it's more about keeping milk away from the meat that we've had. Now, presumably, what it sounds like from both Rashi and the Rambam is that those are for metzius reasons. Like if we wanted to get creative, we could have gone back to our Tamei HaMitzvos and said, when we originally brought up the question, is basar b'chalav about combining basar b'chalav, or is it about eating basar in a certain way with chalav, etc. So it may have been appealing to say that here the isser is really about how you eat basar. You shouldn't eat basar together with chalav. So once you've had basar, there's a greater concern not to have chalav than the other way around. But the mice, that's not what we're seeing from Rashi and the Rambam, that they are emphasizing metzius issues, one way or another. That the Rambam is emphasizing the physical metzius of the meat actually lingering. And Rashi is emphasizing the taste of the meat lingering. So if you saw the Torah, so what does the Torah suggest as possible nafkaminas between the two? So one is, what if you don't swallow the meat? Or what if you just chew up the meat, because maybe nowadays we have machines to do this for us, but still parents still do this. Let's say you're feeding a baby, and the baby can't chew. So you want to chew up the meat for the baby, but you're not going to swallow it. You're going to give it to them. So do you have to wait after that? What do you think? So if the Rambam...
Rambam is still going to be stuck in your teeth. I'm chewing it, but for Rashi also, it was nose and tongue.
Okay, so it's a little bit subjective how exactly it plays out. But the Tour, you're right, the later Svarim point out that one could argue on the Tliya. But the way the Tour has it is that he assumes that according to the Rambam, it would be an issue. It could still end up in your teeth. And according to Rashi, if you're not swallowing it, then we don't have to worry as much. Or alternatively, what if you've already waited however many hours, but so there still is possibly meat between your teeth? Do you need to clean it out? Do you need to floss? So that might be enough to mean in the other direction. Right. So the tour brings these possibilities. But again, it's worthwhile noting one way or another that according to these Rishonim, even if they differ from each other, it seems that the issue about Basar is something factual. It's not about the concept of Basar per se, but it's about the reality of Basar, that Basar has a greater physical stick-to-itiveness, or the taste carries on more. Darkei Tshuva writes, Darkei Tshuva was the Munkacher Rebbe. Was the father of the Minchas Elazar, who was also the Munkacher Rebbe. So his father, the previous Munkacher Rebbe, wrote the Darkei Tshuva. In Munkacher, you have to call it the Darkei Tshiva. So Darkei Tshiva is, if you want to compare it to Mishnah Berurah, you can, because it's in format on Yoredeya, especially because you don't have a Mishnah Berurah on Yoredeya. So yeah, I have a Darkei Tshiva on Yoredeya. So it's a very extensive commentary. He brings a lot of Sfarim. And so even more than the Mishnah Berurah, just per word, you'll find a few lines of Shulchan Aruch on the top, and Darkei Tshuva has always got a lot to say on the bottom. So anyway, so Darkei Tshuva writes that even if you want to say that chewing it up is going to create an obligation to wait, even without swallowing, he says if you just taste it, you just put it on the tip of your tongue, without swallowing or chewing, then he thought that should be a different story already. Not everyone would agree. See, in general, we find that as far as this question of chewing up for the baby and the like, after the Torah writes what he writes, so the approach is that we should be machmir for both reasons. And we've taken a stringent stand towards this. But says the Darkei Tshuva, this is even beyond being machmir for both sides, because here you're not swallowing, you're not chewing. So already that's already a different level to be machmir for that. Yes, sir.
I'm just a little unclear still on how the Torah is understanding Rashi.
Okay.
If Rashi is about the time of the meat, the time of the bus remaining after, and therefore you need to wait, so then why is chewing, are we assuming that, is the Torah assuming for Rashi that the tongue, you know, that's not about swallowing?
Yeah, if you don't swallow, you don't have the tongue. That's how I was assuming. Now, if you want to get, you're asking, let's say, that if you were learning Daf Yomi and you were learning Maseches Brachos, so a few weeks ago there was a sugya which talks about being toim, and there, toim, if you're assuming that there's a relationship between the language of toim and tam, so it's clear, at least from some Rishonim over there, that toim means to taste something and spit it out. So then apparently you have tam without swallowing. So how could you say you only have the tam if you swallow? Is that the question?
Yeah.
It's a fair question. So nonetheless, these tliyas of the tour, like I said, have been questioned a little bit, and that's 100% satisfactory to everybody. And again, the practice on those issues has been to be machmir for both directions. But that's what the Dr. Tshuva builds on. He says, okay, fine. So I can handle if you're chewing it up without swallowing. So you could say, you know, a little plug, and we take this across the board, and we're machmir for both directions. But if you're not swallowing or chewing, so that's not even included in what we're talking about. So then even within the logic of a low plug, you didn't see a reason to be machmir. So this will affect, probably, the question of how we define the notion of waiting. So we started to describe this a little bit the other day, and we'll try to take it a little further now. So all the Gemara tells us is that there were two approaches. One that nobody nowadays follows, and even in the time of the Gemara, in the time of the Marukva, he was wistful about how his father was able to do something that he doesn't do. So what was his father's practice? 24 hours. If he ate meat today, he wouldn't eat milk till tomorrow. And he himself, all the Gemara tells us, is very sparse language. Just won't eat during the same meal. So his father wouldn't eat during the same day, and he wouldn't eat during the same meal. So here's an interesting question to think about as we go further. It's hard to know for sure because this position of the father is not one that anyone holds nowadays, so it's not one that is explored of the halacha. But presumably there's got to have been some logic to it. Right? Because, and this is also important as we enter into the discussion of Minhagim. So every practice that we're going to respect must have some understanding to it. So presumably if the father said, oh, so we're so careful, so my father never eats milchiks, my mother never eats fleishiks, and they never talk to each other. You know, so that wouldn't, I don't think anybody would say, okay, that's kedai chumra. So clearly at some point it doesn't make sense anymore. So do you think there's any way, how would you understand that idea of not having them in the same day? What was he accomplishing, the father? Mark, his father. Now, was that about the taste extending for a day? Did he have such a chash of a chef? How would you relate to that?
Maybe it was stuck in his teeth.
So you think that he had closer teeth? Presumably not, right? See, the language of the Gemara is, first of all, you can't attach it to any kind of detail that was different. See, Mar Ukva is admiring his father for doing something which he doesn't do. So you have to assume two things. That first of all, what his father is doing has some sort to it. And that theoretically, if Marukva was on a higher level, maybe he would have done that too. So it's got to be logical. It can't be about the positioning of the father's teeth. So how would you relate to that, Mori?
So maybe this is about the concept of Basar and not the reality of Basar.
Okay, I'm listening.
There's some...
I think you're right about that. You're saying because what we just said about Rambam and Rashi focusing on certain mitzvahs of Basar, it's hard to imagine that that carries on for a day or that the father was more choshesh to something like that. So, okay, if it's about the concept, then what?
So, say
about
I guess it. Almost to use the, for lack of a better term, the hashkafa of Basar and the effect that the Basar has on the person needs to wait 24 hours, ideally, after.
Okay, so you're saying, still assuming that it's about not eating meat with milk, rather the other way around, right? Because as far as we know, it's still not even, right? It's still about that direction. Like, we have no indication that if the father ate cheese, that he wouldn't have meat till the next day. So it's an interesting point, because if that's the case, so again, why more that direction than the other direction? Not clear, unless you want to say, like, which way you're getting at, right? That maybe it goes to a Tamei HaMitzvos thing here. The Tamei HaMitzvos is that we shouldn't have basar together with milk. And in order not to have it together with milk, we need to have not just avoiding the same bite, but that there's got to be some cooling off period after you have the basar, you don't have milk for a while after. Yeah, yeah, see?
Well, do we necessarily have to read into this more than... Is it possible of just a personal chumra?
It is definitely possible, but the point is two things that we're seeing from the way it's presented. That first of all, it wouldn't be admirable if it didn't have anything to explain it. It's got... Right, but what's the chumra doing? Like, if somebody said, I'm not going to have milk for a month after I have meat, would we say, oh, is it tzaddik? Or is it, yeah. Like, you know... Right, so it's got to be something that we can relate to on some level.
Chumra is only as valuable. I think we've discussed this in our conversation before. That chumra is only as valuable as the grounding behind it.
Yeah, it's got to have something that somehow enhances the concept. You know, it can be one that's not required, albeit, you know, and one that may not make sense for everyone. But it's got to at least have some svara to it. So it's a personal chumra that must be understandable, and. Also, again, the way he's talking, Marukva, he's thinking, yeah, if I was in that level, I would do it too. But I'm not. So, if we're seeing that it's unlikely to be connected to a mitzias, so it seems that it's about the idea of a mental separation between meat and milk. That you should not perceive yourself as having meat and milk in the same... In the same category. Yes, sir, lady.
Then there would be really low plug between dairy and meat, and then meat and dairy. We're saying, like,
right. That's only that's what is harder for us. Right. Again, why do we only go in one direction? You would
I
think.
Mean, if we're saying a whole like of meat, the taste of meat, you know, remains in your mouth, or the meat gets stuck between your teeth, then that would explain why we would only do it. Between dairy, I mean meat and dairy, but
right. Dairy. Mm-hmm. No, I think that is a sticking point.
So what I was saying, if we were going to say that, oh, it's a mental separation, then you would have to have it both ways.
Well, right. So that is the sticking point, but it certainly seems to be the case nonetheless. So, you know, the question of why doesn't it go in both directions? So we need a better answer for it. You know, Markov's father is not responsible for Rashi and the Rambam. If you want, you could maybe even say that it goes like that. That Marukvo thought that we need to have a mental separation between meat and milk. And therefore, once it was in the same day, it was already too much for him. He would wait till the next day before getting involved in milk. But we don't assume that. And La Halacha... So that's probably what the Gemara means, that Maruk was following the din and his father was following a chumrah. So the halacha requires it not be in the same meal. Well, why do we go that far? Right? So it could be that Rashi and the Rambam say, why do we go that far? Well, we go that far because there are mitzias issues of a basar, then a benishinayim, and the taste. So those considerations could be the difference between Markva and his father. But then the question still is, okay, presumably Markva only went in that direction. We don't know that for sure. But sounds like it. So then it's interesting to try to figure out why it should be only in that direction. Now, maybe conceptually there's a statement there. It's hard to prove it, but maybe conceptually there's a statement there. That basar b'chalav is not so much about not combining meat and milk, it's more about not eating meat with milk, which was one of our conceptual possibilities when we started with the Mishnah. That maybe the gadar ha'isser is not to eat meat with milk. So, for example, like we said, that maybe the whole idea of eating milk is already a little bit of a concession and already has a little bit of a fear of achzarius involved. So saying at least the idea of eating the meat cooked in the mother's milk, that's too much. And then we don't say not just mother's milk, but all the milk. So the Gadr HaYisr is maybe more about the meat than it is about the milk. Maybe. So then that theoretically could be a logical flow, that maybe the whole issue is you shouldn't eat meat with milk. And Marukva's father, he was so careful he wouldn't eat them the same day. And we don't go that far. But we do separate them from meals. And why? Because Lamaisa, there's a reality here to also factor in that the meat lingers, whether it's the taste or it is the substance, whether it's Rambam or there is Rashi. Okay. So, I guess we'll have to break in a second, so I'll just to lead into the other shitas. So what we're going to see is that in terms of how much of a break, there is really a very significant machlokas among the Rishonim, and it breaks down to a very significant machlokas lahalacha, as far as, at least to the starting point, Ashkenazim and Sfardim. Because while we discussed last time, so Tosus says it's enough just to have two separate meals. Finish one meal and start the next. But the Rambam understands it differently, and the Rambam introduces the idea of 6 hours. Of there being a defined period of time that it takes. And that is also the view of the Shulchan Aruch. So as a matter of practice, Sfardim relate to the waiting of 6 hours, not really as a matter of minig, but as a matter of din. But that's the din d'Rabbanan. That essentially, you cannot eat meat and milk together. And what does that mean? It means that after eating meat, you can't have milk for another 6 hours.
How does that explain why meat is chomer?
Well, because the Rambam puts it in one sentence. The Rambam says the meat is chomer because of the basar still in his mouth, and therefore no milk for 6 hours. But in the language of the Rambam in the Shulchan Aruch, we don't have different minhagim. We have essentially that one approach that that's presumably treated more like a din rather than as a matter of minig. Even though there's a little bit of wiggle room in whether 6 hours is literal or kih. You know, is it a... So to say something in between 5 and 6, there's a little bit of wiggle room. But as a matter of... It's generally assumed that it's a matter of din at that point within the Sfardim. Hi.
And just in terms of... in terms of Halacha Maisa.
Yeah.
How would Sfardim relate to that? The Shiva the Ma'aril about... meat also being stuck in your teeth.
You mean about milk?
About cheese also.
Yeah, so that we'll have to get to next time. That opens up a whole kind of... But that's also not coming from the Sfas. We'll talk about that guy one next time. But the Ashkenazim have a different approach, which essentially is following essentially the Ramah. If you saw the Ramah, Paskin is really like Tosfos. Right? That really, it's just about having separate meals. And that's where there's some room for different minhagim as to build on top of that. Because despite the fact that the Ramah would say that me'ikir hadin, one just has to separate the meals. But the Ramah also says that it's appropriate what many do to wait. So since it's going to wait 6 hours, he writes there, since it's not coming as the ikir hadin, but it's coming as what he says is appropriate, so we have seen already in the language of the Ramah and elsewhere, the formulation of other minhagim within that, such as 1 hour, and such as 3 hours, which Bizman Hazeh is much more prevalent than 1 hour, but harder to find in the sources, although, as you, God willing, we'll discuss next time, there are theories and there are explanations, some more straightforward than others, to explain where 3 hours comes from. Awesome. So we'll have to stop there. Again, thank you for putting up with the crazy schedule. So we'll start with there again. So today, we'll keep up with what we've seen so far. That's a high priority. And then please go ahead in the Gemara, because we're going to have to cover a lot of ground in between. And that's where we will take things from it again tomorrow with the special schedule that I mentioned.